cold as silence, but we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us, and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, I am Alan Walker. This is Cutting Through the Matrix on Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2009. I always advise newcomers to look into my website at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, where there's lots of talks I've given in the past, where I try to give you shortcuts, the real histories that have led us up to where we are today and where we're supposed to go. I also try to let you know the books that I use, which are not conspiracy books. They're published by the big foundation boys themselves, the big players, the movers and shakers, the ones that are called technocrats. They're unelected, yet they roam all over the planet at their meetings, international meetings, and they successfully bypassed any idea of democracy an awful long time ago. Also look into Alan Watts Sentient Sentinel.eu for transcripts of these talks, which you can download, print up, and they're written in the various languages of Europe. You can also go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and buy the books I have for sale and the discs, etc. That's what keeps me ticking over. I don't ask for payment from any of the shows I'm on. And so I depend upon you, the listeners, to keep me going, because it is expensive just doing what I'm doing here, and very, very time-consuming indeed. It's astonishing to watch the machinations of the big boys as they prepare for the years of riots ahead. Because obviously they never tell the children what they're up to, and they truly do treat us like children. We can see the movements towards anti-riots control everywhere across the planet. In fact, they've been rehearsing this for many, many, many years. Anti-riot control. Even before 9/11 came along in 2001, there was big money going into across Europe and Americas into creating these special police forces and SWAT teams and all the rest of it, and riot teams, and a whole multitude of different sections of police that some of their names you wouldn't even know they were, to do with what's coming up today. Because they do plan for their own think tanks for at least 30 years of ongoing rioting, planned, as I say, before they decided to burst the bubble on the economy. They could have kept the same con game going for as long as they wanted, but they decided to bring it down now, because it's the time to bring it down according to their plans. But their plans, remember, at the top are not just to scrape in money and, or I should say, buy the shovel full into their coffers. Money is just a means of control and power to them. And that's only one part of their strategy at the top. They truly are in league with academia. In fact, they finance and control academia and sciences. And they've decided a long time ago that they want a nice little utopia where science itself will create new types of servants for them that won't need entertainment and won't need distractions and will work happily for them forever. Self-repairing humanoid robots, basically. And they don't need so many of us anymore. We are taking up their resources for their offspring for the future. And why should the useless eaters, those with inferior genes, do that, when those with the superior genes obviously will need it for their offspring? So this is all part of a very old agenda. It's been discussed in universities across the planet. I have many talks and lectures given here on the drastic reduction of population by necessity. And I've read many, many quotes and articles over the years on this very topic. The reason the public can even hear some of these things themselves and dismiss it is because they cannot believe anyone is so evil as to actually mean what they say and go ahead and do it. That's why they can do it. Back with more after the following break. We'll be right back. Alan Watt, we're cutting through the matrix, discussing how we're trained incrementally over the years to think that everything's always normal, even though if you go back with a time machine and compare 10 years, 15 years, 20 years with today, you see how drastically everything has changed. Incrementalism is the key to it. We're trained like animals, stage by stage. I can remember years ago when Hill Street Blues was shown over in Europe. And Hill Street Blues was about cops. And of course, they give you the personalities to identify with. They were really human and good guys and all that kind of stuff. And then there was a SWAT team attached to them. And the guy in charge of the SWAT team was kind of gung-ho, but it was very militaristic. And it had these little discussions between the chief of police and the SWAT team leader, as they would often fight over should he use the SWAT team or not, etc., etc., all to save the public, mind you. But really, it was a conditioning process to get the public used to accepting this. And over the years, gradually, you start to see all the police wearing the same kind of black uniforms across the planet. And they're all SWAT team members. That's how they train us, incrementally, through fiction first, and then reality. Whatever we see in fiction, we accept in reality down the road. And how far we've come, because if they tried this stunt 20 years ago that I'm going to read now, there'd have been an outrage about it. But not anymore, because we're trained. We're trained, you see. And most people like to, it's a strange thing. It's like those that used to bring apples for the teacher. They want to please the teacher, the people pleasers. They always let the rest of society down, you see. After all, who likes to be in school? This is from the Daily Times Herald, Carroll, Iowa. Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2009. Guardsmen to conduct urban training at Arcadia in April by Butch Heyman, staff writer. It says the primary phase will be done Saturday, April 4th, when convoys will be deployed from Carroll to Arcadia. Pictures of a suspected arms dealer will be shown in Arcadia, and soldiers will go door to door asking if residents have seen the suspect. The drill, it says here, will culminate in the apprehension of the suspected arms dealer. Now, this is not for work overseas, because they're not selling firearms out of a store in Iraq. You see? So where do you think this is supposed to be taking place, this kind of scenario for the upcoming future? It says here, the Carroll National Guard unit will train on urban military operations by holding a four-day exercise at Arcadia. The purpose of the April 2nd to 5th drill will be to gather intelligence, then search for and apprehend a suspected weapons dealer, according to Sergeant Mike Kotz, Readiness NCO for Alpha Company. Citizens, law enforcement, media, and other supporters will participate. It's almost like an order, isn't it? Media and other supporters will participate. Troops will spend Thursday, April 2nd, staging at a forward operations base at Carroll. The next day, company leaders will conduct a reconnaissance and begin patrolling the streets of Arcadia to identify possible locations of the weapons dealer. The primary phase will be done Saturday, April 4th, when convoys will be deployed from Carroll to Arcadia. And then it goes on and on, but asking the residents if they've seen the suspects. Soldiers will knock only at households that have agreed to participate in the drill, Kotz noted. In other words, the ones with the apples for the teacher. Yeah. It says, once credible intelligence has been gathered, said Kotz, portions of the town will be roadblocked and more in-depth searches of homes and vehicles will be conducted in accordance with the residents' wishes. The residents want this, right, supposedly. More in-depth searches of homes and vehicles. It's roadblocks as well. One of the techniques we use in today's political environment, that's interesting, today's political environment, is cordon and knock, Kotz explained. We ask for the head of the household, get permission to search, then have them open doors and cupboards. The homeowner maintains control. Really, you've got a guy behind you with a rifle. The homeowner maintains control. We peer over the shoulder and the soldier at the back of you, right, uses the homeowner's body language and position to protect him, the soldier. So he's watching for any any sudden movements, don't drop the sugar when you're up at that cupboard, whatever you do. During this phase of the operation, troops will interact with residents and media. So it's a media event, you see, to make sure it's all quite normal. That's how they present it. While implementing crowd control measures and possibly treating and evacuating injured persons. The unit will use a Black Hawk helicopter for overhead command and control and to simulate medevacs. The drill will culminate in the apprehension of a suspected arms dealer. Alpha Company will conduct a review of the drill on Sunday, April the 5th. A meeting to give residents more information and accept volunteers will be held 7 p.m. on Monday, March the 2nd, in the Arcadia American Legion Hall. Quote said the exercise will replace Alpha Company's weekend drill for April. We have a lot of extended drills this coming year, he added. In addition to surveillance, searching, and apprehension, the exercise will also give the troops valuable experience in stability, support, patrol, traffic control, vehicle searches, and other skills needed for deployment in an urban environment. The exercise will improve the real-life operational skills of the unit, said COTS, and it will hopefully improve the public's understanding of military operations. Well, I hope so. I hope they get the point. The pre-drill work with residents is as important as the drill itself. It'll be important for us to gain the trust and confidence of the residents of Arcadia, said COTS. We'll need to identify the individuals that are willing to assist us in training by allowing us to search their homes and vehicles and to participate in role-playing. We really want to get as much information out there as possible because this operation could be pretty intrusive to the people of Arcadia. No kidding. No kidding, eh? So there you go. This is all for what's coming up. And there'll be similar exercises going across the country at the same time. I can pretty well guarantee you that. Again, too, it's wonderful how they can put the stuff out in local papers and the state next to it or the county next to it won't even have an idea it's happening. They might even have their own one and it's in their local paper. They don't know what's happening across the country. This is how isolated it can keep you. So simple with the media, isn't it? And I've read articles before about the tasering massacres that go on since they gave the new toys to the police, who seem to be only too joyful to use them out on people, and how they've killed a whole bunch of people by multiple tasers and so on. But because of what's coming up, you see, with the upcoming riots, which is definitely going to happen, it's planned that way, the cops are getting desperate too and edgy. So they're coming out here, and this is from Canada here, the CBC Canada, February 24th, 2009. All officers need tasers, police associations say. Canadian Police Association President Charles Mommy says public safety is enhanced by the use of stun guns, which he said all officers should be authorized to carry. Canadian Police Association President Charles Mommy says public safety is enhanced by the use of stun guns, which he said all officers should be... Canada's two main police associations defended the use of tasers Tuesday, saying all officers should be equipped, blah, blah, blah. Because, they save lives, and there's no proof they have been directly responsible for civilian deaths. You know why? Because, you see, they asked the coroners to put down as heart failure, you see. And, of course, many things can cause heart failure. It's just a pure coincidence the heart failure happens when they're getting tasered. But that's no joking. They actually asked the coroners to do this. And the coroners, who belong to the same Masonic clubs, play the game. You see? They play the game. And, of course, what they'll say is, well, there's never been a blind study to see if that person would have had a heart attack at that particular time, at that place, if he had not been tasered. That's how they'll do it. You see? I've read report after report on this. There's been some cases where people have had their faces chewed off with multiple stuns as these little hooks go into them. It's astonishing, really astonishing. But they need this stuff because they're all getting edgy, you see, for what's coming. It says, we reiterate that to date there is no evidence, either scientific or medical, that a conducted energy weapon has been the direct cause, right, of death anywhere at any time on any person, Chief Tom Kay, Vice President of the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, that's a UN, United Nations Association, by the way, said at a news conference in Ottawa. And I wonder how well he knows the maker, the big company that makes these tasers, because there will be a connection here. The Canadian Police Association, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, representing chiefs and rank-and-file officers, said the public has been subjected to inaccurate and incomplete information on electrical stun guns, and they want to dispel some of the myths related to their use. The bottom line is that conducted energy weapons save lives, said Charles Maumee, president of CPA. Boy, he's seen a lot, this guy, isn't he? They save lives. Save lives, eh? They stun you and they kill you and they save lives. But you had a heart attack at that moment because it was pure chance. Just pure chance. He says they certainly enhance public safety and officer safety. It is our position that all officers should be authorized to carry CEWs, Maumee said. I think the officers should also be provided with regular and adequate use of force training. They say that the weapon should only be used if there's a threat to the police officer or a threat to the public. Well, we've already seen that overthrown. Now, the police don't go and grab someone anymore, even when there's about four or five of them standing there. So this taser you to death. Oh, sorry, you had an accident. You had a heart attack when you're being tasered. Separate thing altogether. Back with more after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi folks, I am Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. A few years ago, we all saw the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay with their orange suits on, who'd be kneeling in the sun with black hoods on and their hands tied behind their backs. And folk would say, well, they're prisoners. We're witnessing prisoners being held by guards. What you were witnessing was torture, because you try kneeling in the sun for hours without moving, maybe getting a swift kick if you happen to move, with a black hood on your head and no water and so on. That's called torture. And you see, there really are people who enjoy torturing, regardless of all the studies that have been done to show that anyone in experimental situations can be ordered and generally complies with the order from a superior to torture. There are lots of people who enjoy torture. And the studies, even in psychology, of those who end up going into police and enforcement occupations have a bully-type mentality. They like authority. They like the smell of fear of the public. They like it, enjoy it. That's why they become officers. It's not to keep the peace or to help the people. It's because they smell the fear of the public when they stop your car. They smell it, and they enjoy that. You see, these people couldn't get any kind of respect if they were in any other occupation. But putting that uniform on and wearing the gun there gives you that respect. People fear you. So we're witnessing a terrible future coming up, because they've been recruiting these people for years and years and years. They've been brought up as a whole generation on video games with full ideas to kill, 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 designed for the military, given to this generation for this time coming up by the long-term planners. To continue a little bit with this article, it says here, and it's all utter rot what we're getting told here, because they want these badly, and there's contracts, big money involved too. It says here, there's got to be some active resistance on people's behalf to be stunned, right? There's got to be some kind of assaultive, combative behavior, said Kay, who's chief of the Owen Sound, Ontario Police Force. It shouldn't be used in passive resistance cases, said Kay. He acknowledged that police, now see how they word this too, may have used it in those kinds of cases in the past. They may have, which means they may not have. See, they're very, very careful how they say things. It says they may have allowed it to be used more as a compliance device. Well, you see, that's torture, you see. We're suggesting that that's not correct, he said, adding that there needs to be a better job done of reporting and tracking the use of the device. No kidding. It says police use of tasers generated intense public concern after the Polish immigrant Robert Zehanski, and I read that on the air at the time, died at Vancouver International Airport more than a year ago. An RCMP officer hit Zehanski with a taser shortly before his death, more than once, I think, too. British Columbia called an inquiry that's been looking at the use of tasers and the circumstances surrounding Zekanski's death. Kay wouldn't comment on this case or whether he believed the taser was responsible. Well, of course he won. He won. His job is to make sure that it's got nothing to do with killing people. So I won't read any more of this rubbish on this particular PR story. And that's all it is a PR story. Because it's self-evident what it's all about. Self-evident. Now, there's a lot going on to do with bacterial and viral warfare. And I've read from books in the past to do with how far back it goes that we know of. And in fact, they were practicing with viral warfare back in about 1917 in some countries. I've got a whole show I'm going to do on that one day. And in World War II, Canada led the world in bacterial and viral warfare. Little old Snow White Canada, the pristine little clean country that it is, covers a lot of dirt under that snow. Because we learn from Britain after Britain really rules Canada, at least London does. And it's so easy for them, even in World War II, they could actually breed a new kind of virus within an hour in fast incubation studies. But part of the program, too, in World War II, one of the many parts, the different areas, including the destruction of crops in enemy territory by various means. But our tactic was to get something to carry the virus or the bacterium. And so they bred special, what they call bomber mosquitoes, these big mosquitoes that can carry a heavy loading dose, because that's what infects you. If there's only too few viruses or bacterium, often it won't take in your body. The antibodies can overcome it. But if they can get enough into the body in a loading dose, it might overtake your body's immune system and beat it. So they bred these special big mosquitoes. And Belleville in Ontario, Canada, was one of the main laboratories, I think it's still going, that breeds these. And they sell them and they send them off to other bacterial warfare units, even in the U.S. and other places too. Still ongoing. But here's a spin on mosquitoes today. It's going to help us, you see. It's going to help us. It's from PLOS Medicine. Malaria control with transgenic mosquitoes. This is how they're going to spin it to us. It says here, this is from 2009 by Marshall and Taylor. I guess these two guys did the study on it. Malaria has been eliminated from a large part of the world. By the mid-20th century, both North America and Europe are free from the disease, and I'll carry on with this and tell you where it's going after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Alan Watt, or Cutting Through the Matrix, and I've been discussing mosquitoes, of all things, because it's one of the oldest methods of transmitting disease. We should never forget that. And billions of mosquitoes can be bred in a very small area and released. In fact, I've read articles over the years where the U.S. military had gone into small villages with massive tractor trailers and opened them up and spread mosquitoes, and the next morning people woke up to find mosquitoes all over their buildings. Millions and billions of them. It was never disclosed as to what they were trying to prove or if these mosquitoes were carrying anything. But I've done so many of these kind of experiments on the public, it would go into shock if we knew what was really going on. But here they are talking about using mosquitoes to prevent disease, you see. Now, if you release mosquitoes, even if they were going to prevent disease, in the middle of a plague, for instance, it's going to spread the plague, regardless of what it's preventing. It's the greatest vector or method for transmission, very quick and easy, and very cheap to breed to. So this report says malaria has been eliminated from a large part of the world. By the mid-20th century, both North America and Europe were free of the disease, although both had suffered greatly during the prior century. While a variety of means were used to achieve this eradication, the most important are thought to be reducing the number of breeding sites for malaria vectors and improving residential areas to separate humans from mosquitoes. Well, actually, you see, they've bred more of them because that's when they started to put in the wetlands, breeding wetlands. It's fantastic, you see, for the bugs. They love it. Mosquitoes love it. Other parts of the world have not been so fortunate. In sub-Saharan Africa, it's now estimated there are more than 360 million clinical cases and 1 million deaths due to malaria each year. They almost decimated it, by the way, when they were using DDT. But actually, there was other certain factors and foundations up in arms about that because they wanted the population reduced. And I've read articles and from books from people like Huxley and others who bemoaned the fact that the Black Death wasn't around anymore. To continue, it says, furthermore, despite ambitious goals for such as those of the rollback malaria initiatives to half malaria deaths by 2010, mortality from the disease has actually risen halfway through the program. Clearly, the tools we have to control malaria or the ways in which we're using them are not working. No kidding. The future of existing methods for malaria control has sparked interest in several new approaches. These include better and cheaper antimalarial drugs, renewed efforts to find a vaccine, and the development of genetically modified mosquitoes, GMMs. That must be a grandmaster mason, I guess. Genetically modified mosquitoes, GMMs. Designed either to reduce population sizes or to replace existing populations with vectors unable to transmit the disease. In this review, we describe some of the efforts currently underway to create GMMs and assess some of the obstacles they face. Then they go into the background. Malaria in humans results from infection by any of the five species of Plasmodium P. falciparum, etc., etc. These are transmitted to humans by approximately 50 species of mosquitoes, probably belonging to the genus Anopheles. It goes on and on about the different types. However, they say most species of mosquitoes do not transmit malaria, even among species that do. Many individuals seem incapable of transmitting the disease. They're refractory. Accordingly, there's reason to hope that the genes that permit malarial infections in mosquitoes can be identified, then replaced or altered in terms of their function. In this way, it's hoped that mosquito populations will become refractory to the parasite, eventually leading to malaria transmission being halted. Then it goes into the different laboratories that are working on this. The laboratory of Marcelo Jacobs Lorena at Johns Hopkins University has successfully engineered mosquitoes that confer resistance to rodent malaria. So it's great for rodents, right? Their approach was to first identify receptor sites, etc., etc., and they went on from there. But this gives you a list of the different laboratories that are working on this, and this ties in with the next article you see. Because guess who's really behind all this? Here's an article here from Fox News and the Science, their Science page. February the 5th, 2009, Bill Gates unleashes swarm of mosquitoes on a crowd. This is all happening at the same time. See, everything happens at the same time. They give you just apparently unrelated stories, you see. And this great philanthropist, the supposedly, self-made man, you see, that the doors just opened and he went right to the top. He's now a philanthropist with a big foundation, along with the rest of the big foundations that help lead the world in certain directions, preordained, of course. So here's Bill Gates unleashing a swarm of mosquitoes in a crowd. by James Duncan Davison. It says, Microsoft founder turned philanthropist Bill Gates released a glass full of mosquitoes at an elite technology conference to make a point about the deadly disease malaria. He says it's spread by mosquitoes. The guy's learning as he gets older, isn't he? He said while opening a jar on stage at the Technology and Entertainment Designs Conference, a gathering known to attract technology kings, politicians, and Hollywood stars. I brought some, he says. Here, I'll let them roam around. There's no reason only poor people should be infected. Oh, what? Oh, can you believe it? Only poor people should be infected. First reported on social networking site Twitter, Facebook senior platform manager Dave Morin blogged, Bill Gates just released mosquitoes into the audience at TED. Gates then waited a minute or so before assuring the audience the freed insects were malaria-free. The unusual presentation on malaria prevention was confirmed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's media office. Now, remember what most of their money goes into. Bill and Melinda here. It goes into what they call family planning, which is really abortion outfits across the world, mainly in the third world, in line with the agenda set out by Kissinger when he declared the greatest threat to the nation, in fact, to the planet, was overpopulation, and a lot of things went into motion then to bring them down. And, of course, what they call family planning, which is abortion, was one of them, under the pretense that the care for women is actually to do with depopulation. So here's Bill and Melinda, who gives all this money to all these UN agencies or NGOs. The UN will always say legally they don't run abortion clinics, which is true. It's all their NGOs that do it, and they're funded by the foundations. So here they are. They want to increase the population of humans, obviously, by eradicating malaria. I don't trust these guys at all. It says Gates retired as head of Microsoft last year to focus more on his foundation. One of his key projects is ending malaria, and it spent millions on fighting the disease. The philanthropist has been pushing to reduce malaria deaths throughout the non-profit organization. In September, Gates announced that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation would provide $168.7 million to the PATH Malaria Vaccine Initiative to help develop a vaccine for the deadly disease. Like, sure. And this is the kind of stuff, you see, we're being given to prepare us for mosquitoes because, you see, there's more to it than that. This is from, and I've read it before, it's from nullhypothesis.co.uk. And this article came out, I think, January the 15th. It says here, mosquitoes as new medical syringes. See, it's all coming out at the same time. It's coordinated across the world. New plans to use mosquitoes as micro syringes have been released by a leading British biotechnology company, John Soames, chairman of the Medical Life Sciences Group based in Cambridge, England. He held a press conference yesterday afternoon to announce the news to the world's media. The new technology is set to revolutionize the medical profession, allowing minuscule amounts of drugs, vaccines, and serums to be injected directly into patients. Soames said yesterday the amount of drugs that are administered in a typical syringe are measured in millimeters or milliliters, with infusion pumps able to give as little as 0.1 milliliter doses. However, they're calling them Mozzie nozzles or hypermoz. These are far more sensitive and are able to inject as little as 0.01 mil of fluid directly into their target. This is ideal for giving antibiotics to very specific areas in the body, such as individual hair follicles or skin pores. I guess it is telling mosquitoes where to bite, eh? Another benefit of using insect-borne jabs is to remove the fear factor associated with syringes. Some 10% of the population suffer from trypanophobia, the fear of needles, and having an insect that gives you the jab that you don't feel until it's too late is rather appealing. I'll tell you, I've been bitten by the mosquitoes here, and when they hit a nerve, you feel it all right. You certainly feel it. These proboscises are about 1/4 inch long, or longer in some of them. to surgeons around the country could be rearing their own mosquito colonies as early as next year. And see, it's all happening at once. Maybe you think it's all independent. They've all come to the same conclusion at the same time, independently, of course. Harry Freeman from Breed and Bite. Breed and Bite's a company. And Darby said, this comes a bit of a shock, but we'll be trying to increase our demand as soon as we know what type of mosquito they need. But these companies already exist all over the place. The most likely candidate is Culex pipiens, the most common urban mosquito, and the one that has been modified to have a transparent abdomen that modified it, with a graduated milliliter scale for loading the insect with the correct dose. And it goes on about the different kinds of mosquitoes we're going to use. It's quite amazing. But when I scroll down here, there's a letter sent to the Gates Foundation, because that's who's behind this. It doesn't mention it in that article, but that's who's behind this particular one. Again, he's everywhere. It's from Health Freedoms, or healthfreedomusa.org. Gates Foundation, the ethics of funding mosquito flying syringes. This was sent from Ralph Fusetola, JD, to Dr. Rima Lebo, Gates Foundation, and a Helsinki Declaration. That's what it's about. I'm a trustee of the Natural Solutions Foundation, the largest Netroots Health Freedom NGO. This email is to comment upon the below article, media article, Flying Syringe, about the Gates Foundation's most recent Grand Challenges Awards and our concern that your organization is not paying enough attention to the ethical requirements of the Declaration of Helsinki of the World Medical Association. The Natural Solutions Foundation, founded in 2004, is an international NGO focused on health freedom. I think it's what you say here. The mission of the foundation is to discover, develop, demonstrate, disseminate natural solutions, etc., etc. This is, and also to take care of health freedoms and defend them for people. They said the Helsinki Declaration absolutely forbids treating people without their informed consent. It further forbids experimental treatments without fully informing people of their side effects. There are a number of other provisions of the Declaration that might also apply to the act of releasing genetically modified mosquitoes for the purpose of involuntarily vaccinating people. It says here, so they would be, with the Natural Solutions Foundation, its trustees, etc., we're pleased to enter into dialogue with the Gates Foundation about the ethical issues involved with involuntarily or mandated vaccinations. Well, going back to what I said at the beginning to do with mosquito breeding, it was initially done for carrying disease for warfare purposes. And when you see all these big foundation boys that all started off, remember, as bankers with their foundations with an agenda of depopulation and eugenics, it has never changed this direction. Why on earth would you ever trust them to release anything on the general public? And again, it is without our consent, isn't it? And this is what these articles are about. You see, they're going to start in hospitals, supposedly, except for Africa. They'll use them as the guinea pigs, as they always do. And then they'll put them on the general population. Now, the reason the supposed influenza nasal spray was stopped getting used in malls was because the stuff wafted across the malls and everyone in the area were getting doses of this stuff without their consent. So here they want to release mosquitoes on the public. Does a mosquito ask for your consent? I don't think so. And what's it really injecting into you? What else have they modified in this particular bug? Since the military-industrial complex has always been at the head of experimental mosquitoes for transmission of diseases, I don't trust them at all. At all. Boy, I'm ranting tonight, I'm telling you, because everything really is so incredibly obvious. So incredibly obvious, it really is. Here's an article here. You see, all the greenies are getting worried about the credit crunch and the depression, this worldwide depression that's coming down fast, the planned depression. And I've said before, this greening project with its carbon taxes and so on will continue because it's all part of the depopulation program and bringing down the numbers of humans, since each human supposedly is responsible for X amount of carbon being pumped into the atmosphere in their lifetime. This is the quackery they're using to push it. But some of them are panicking, wondering if they'll lose all their grants and all their loans and all the money that's getting thrown at them. And this is from the Telegraph, Tuesday 24th of February 2009. And it says here, it's by Christopher Booker, climate change rhetoric spirals out of control. Christopher Booker says that the government must be absolutely sure that their data on climate change is accurate. It was another bad week for the warmists, they call themselves warmists, now more desperate than ever to whip up alarm over an overheating planet that's actually cooling. I added the last part. It began last weekend with BBC reading its bulletins on the news that a leading climate scientist in America, Professor Chris Field, had warned that the severity of global warming over the next century will be much worse than previously believed. Boy, these guys are with some religion, eh? A belief system. Future temperatures will be beyond anything predicted, he says, he told the Chicago conference. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had seriously underestimated the size of the problem, he says. They're all abandoning it at the IPCC in droves. The puzzle as to why the BBC should make this main news of the day only deepened when it emerged that Professor Field was not a climate scientist at all, but an evolutionary biologist. Evolution and a biologist. To promote its cause, the BBC website even posited a video explaining how warming would be made worse by negative feedback. This scientific howler, joke that is, provoked much amusement and derision on expert US blogs such as Anthony Watts' What's Up With That, since negative feedback would lower temperatures rather than raise them. The BBC soon pulled its video, its alarmist video, you see. This was followed on Sunday by yet another outburst from the most extreme of all the scientists crying wolf on global warming, Al Gore's ally Dr. James Hansen. Back with more after this break. Hi folks, this is Alan Watt. We're cutting into the matrix and I'm reading an article from the Telegraph where the global warming guys are panicking that they might lose some of their funding because the world's gone broke, you see, so they're really whipping up the hysteria. And it says here, this was followed on Sunday by another outburst from the most extreme of all the scientists crying wolf on global warming, Al Gore's ally Dr. James Hansen, director of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies, of all things. In the Observer, he launched his most vitriolic attack for the closing down of all the coal-fired power plants, which are the world's main source of electricity, repeating his claim to a British court last year that the new coal-fired plant at King's North will alone be responsible for the extermination of 400 species. They're always pulling these numbers out of the air. David Suzuki did it years ago, and about 15 years ago, there should technically be nothing left on the planet, by his estimate, and he's still doing it. Coal-fired power plants are factories of death. Now, listen to the terminology from marketers. This is marketing news and big marketers, we see. Coal-fired power plants are factories of death, wrote Hansen. The trains carrying coal to power plants are death trains. This deliberate echo of the trains carrying Jews to Nazi death camps recalled by the more extreme warmists like to equate skeptics on climate change with Holocaust deniers. I said that a while back. They're using this terminology because they're using marketers, you see, and psychologists. It says, but such overheated language seems somehow at home in the newspaper, which in 1996 solemnly predicted that by 2016, 500,000 Britons would be dying each year from having eaten BSE-infected beef. And you don't even hear about that anymore. But these alarmists are amazing guys, aren't they? Remember, it's all eugenics, you see? Depopulation. And, of course, they want you to be in a third world status across the planet, the global plantation, so they can then bring us down quietly and there's no feedback from anyone. We're all dying passively, lawfully, by the way, all very lawfully. It's very important we die lawfully, especially for the policemen. They don't want to pull their tasers on us then. And last thing is from the BBC, and you can look up this. I think it's an audio or a video. It says, time for national citizenship service. I'll leave all these links at the end of the show on my site. Tuesday 24th, February 2009, Labour MP Frank Fields thinks it's time to introduce a compulsory national citizenship programme for 16 to 25-year-olds. It means young people working on community projects such as helping out on environmental schemes or mentoring in schools. He discussed his plans in the studio with John Gaunt. So I'll leave that up there and you can listen to it at your leisure. But see what they're doing. Remember, I've said they're going to bring in a world of service. You'd be in service to the world state. And they're also bringing back the old CCW, I think they called it, and at the first Great Depression, where they started up camps for unemployed young men. And they gave them army uniforms, and they worked helping build roads and all this kind of stuff, make work projects. This is their answer to the global depression. We'll all end up working for the state in service to the world community. That's what it's really all about. Quite something, isn't it? But this is the world in which we live. And as I say, it's all planned long in advance. Everyone knew that the stock market was a con game forever. But they pulled the plug now because they've set up the machinery to deal with all the chaos. And that's why they gave us 9/11 on 2001, and Bush set the machinery into place. Now they put Obama in to actually use it. I hear the music coming in, so from Hamish, myself, and here in Canada, where it's global freezing, it's good night. And may your God or your gods go with you.